Hello, and welcome back to the 75th Ranger Regiment IT Innovators Podcast. Today's interview is with the Enterprise Cloud Management Agency Director, Mr. Paul Puckett. Mr. Puckett is a General Officer Equivalent Department of the Army Civilian, known as a Senior Executive Service Member. He has previously served as a National Geospatial Intelligence Agency IT Director and as the Federal Chief Technology Officer of a software company. The primary function of the Enterprise Cloud Management Agency is to serve as the dedicated enterprise cloud migration resource for the Army. In today's episode, we discuss the future of the Army cloud migration and how the cloud enables software development. Thank you for listening. Rangers lead the way.
At dawn on the morning of the 6th of June, 1944, 225 Rangers ran to the bottom of these cliffs, and the American Rangers began to climb.
Today, we have done what we had to do. If necessary, we shall do it again. He counted on America to be passive. He counted wrong.
Mr. Puckett, thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me.
As an Army, how would you say we got to this point, reference cloud and software initiatives?
So reference cloud and software initiatives, I think maybe looking back to the 2015 cloud strategy that the Army put out, I think a lot of what was codified in that strategy is what has led to a number of the, I would say, both positive and perhaps not so positive outcomes that we see today. And I'll give some context for that. The 2015 cloud strategy came at a time where, you know, the intelligence community had just leaned in just a few years prior with their acquisition of C2S. So it was a topic in conversation where we started to see movement in the community and adoption of people starting to experiment and learn with cloud. And the Army knew that there was a strategic imperative there to start to adopt commercial cloud technology in this world where, you know, the typical challenges and lead times for acquiring hardware were almost kind of thrown out the window. We had infrastructure, you know, at the click of a button. And so with that opportunity, you know, what does that mean for us? And I think that's a thread we need to continue to focus on. But at the time in 2014, 2015, we saw the community starting to move and starting to learn. And so the Army put out the Army Cloud Strategy. But what didn't necessarily come with that Army Cloud Strategy was the resourcing and the really kind of like centralized focus to be purposeful in the adoption of cloud. It was a little bit, and for where we were in the journey, it was a little bit of experimentation. And where we find ourselves now and what we've matured to now is in 2018, seeding into 2019, when my office was stood up, was, okay, we've learned something in this experimentation. We see that really a lot of our adoption of cloud has just simply mirrored what we've always done in the data center. Like, we haven't tapped into the value of on-demand computing to fundamentally rewrite how we acquire infrastructure. Like, we haven't tapped into this world of software development. Like, the hardware challenges to a degree, and kind of the continental United States kind of enterprise world to a degree, has been kind of, you know, removed from the equation of being a challenge. So as we focus now on the virtual realm, like the value of software and data, have we changed the way that we design in-field systems to leverage this real-time experimentation that can exist with commercial cloud? And so in 2018, 2019, there's this realization of like, we haven't been as effective or as efficient as we need to be to do this right for the Army. We haven't resourced this in a way that makes sense, that drives a greater strategy for the execution and the value that we're getting out of the cloud. We haven't leaned into this to a way where there's a team responsible for driving this strategy, to leading this strategy, to being a catalyst for change for our adoption of cloud, kind of a voice in the room, an advocate, and a partner for how we can be more thoughtful with how we leverage cloud. And so I think that's what's kind of brought us to where we are today is we're now 2020. We now have the ECMO stood up. We have resources that have been carved for the next couple of years to really act as seed money for modernization. And we've codified a new cloud plan. So we've taken the 2015 cloud strategy. We've applied the lessons learned that we've seen from the Army, codified that into a plan, put some metrics around that plan, put some milestones out there that we're aiming to achieve. And we've shifted this strategy from more so this kind of cloud first, like, hey, we're just going to go and do cloud, to, hey, can we be thoughtful about the cloud and how we adopt it? Because it is an enabler and a catalyst to some operational outcomes that are still out of reach for us that we need to tap into. And that is this world where Army data, operational data that we create, we've got the ability in real time to derive the greatest amount of value from that data, accelerate the way that we make decisions, and enhance the way that we fight and win wars. That's the opportunity here. And so my office and the resources are focused entirely on squeezing every ounce of value out of a cloud methodology for the Army to increase our readiness and lethality. So that's, in my opinion, what's got us here.
Hey, Paul, for my context, it's really all about the Ranger on the ground and obviously the commanders. What is, in layman's terms, what does it bring? What capability and what value is it going to bring to those young soldiers and those commanders that are trying to fight and win the nation's wars?
Yeah, so this is kind of, I think it's a two-part question. The first part of this question is at the pointy end of the spear. People have never quite frankly cared, and really almost just shouldn't care, of how any capability gets brought to bear. What matters is, do I have the right capability? Does it help me get the job done? And am I able to bring people home safely, right? Am I able to fight and win wars and bring people home safely? Like, they really, like, operational commanders do not care, like, what technology you used, what methodology you used. Like, there's zero care whatsoever. Just, does it get the job done? And too often we find that it doesn't really get the job done. Like, it may get the job done, but it's like, it's not fun to use. And a lot of times you have to kind of do some gymnastics around a given capability just to make it usable, right? To get the job done. And a lot of the challenge there in the first part is peeling back the onion for people to understand just kind of the way that capability got to be fielded and the time and the effort that was put into how that capability got fielded typically is a story that starts, you know, 5, if not 7 years before that capability got fielded. And so if you kind of think of it this way, is if our processes can really only complement our ability to field technology in 7 years, like if it takes us 7 years to field a technology, especially in the world of today where technology changes dramatically day to day, that takes way, way, way too long. And so the first part for operational commanders is helping peel back the onion of, hey, I think you need to understand typically how IT systems have been fielded today. It takes 5 to 7 years for a good idea to become a validated requirement, to become a resourced program, to become an acquisition that gets designed and tested and fielded now globally to solve a problem. And that takes way too long. And so commercial cloud, like just even cloud in general, like on-demand computing resources and infrastructure, now almost all but eliminates the lead time before I can start experimenting and trying and fielding solutions. So what once took me 5 to 7 years to get a capability fielded, to get feedback from a soldier of like, hey, did we actually hit the mark? We've seen demonstrated capabilities go from idea to production in 3 to 6 months. And that's not like, you know, just a prototype that's like, oh, you kind of like it. Well, then let me disappear for 5 years and then I'll deliver the thing. That is real working capability that solves a problem that then we're able to now improve upon, enhance the features, you know, start to you know, work with some challenges, whether it be, you know, fielding for unclass or secret or top secret, like can start to add capability to that now in real time. Like,
can you
the
give
true
me,
definition of agility.
Can you give any examples of what you said about that fielding, that quick set fielding?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So for instance, and it's now being done in experimentation. I've got maybe a few examples for you. What was like a good idea over in Gabriel Nimbus. So we've got a big data platform that exists over in Gabriel Nimbus. And it's a capability that's built in commercial cloud today, leveraging a number of open source tools. And the whole entire point of Gabriel Nimbus is it's a capability for our defensive cyber operations. So all of our information and logs and telemetry of what's happening across the Army network is sent to Gabriel Nimbus to run big data analytics to improve how we defend our systems in the Army environments. For that team, if they've got a good idea, they've got an ecosystem that is designed in a way where they can deliver a capability, move it through an automated pipeline of software tools that takes an immature idea and validates that it is written well, that the code is good, that it has no security vulnerabilities that would limit it from being fielded. And they've got the ability to accelerate and move through that pipeline and become operational in a matter of really weeks, kind of days, if not weeks. And that's kind of the full maturity of the pipeline from like, I don't know, maybe this might be a good idea to, yes, this is now an operational capability. And they didn't have to plan for infrastructure because the infrastructure already exists on demand when they need it. And so all that's left in their timelines is this good idea, you know, worth it to the mission that I have? And they're able to go and field it. Another capability, and this is kind of the early iterations of the AFC software factory that's now spinning up in Austin, they ran a prototype experiment. And so they designed and fielded a capability, and they built a cloud-native platform to host that capability. And they were operational within a couple of months. And that is all the way from, hey, is maybe this a good idea? And codifying and kind of creating their strategy and then building a team to now having a product that's fielded and operational being used and a product team. And so it's this point to operational commanders of, hey, if you got a good idea, we now have the ability to accelerate getting that idea to become a usable, feasible, and viable solution for your mission. And the beautiful thing about that is I'm going to deliver a capability, you know, for you here soon, and then you're going to give me feedback, and I'm going to continuously enhance that capability, make it better, make it more useful. And this mirrors really the commercial side of the world. But I want to get to your original question, like, why does this matter? It's and I said it's two pieces. So it's peeling back that onion of just understanding how things come to be. It's like the whole understanding the whole value chain from idea to production. Like, you need to understand how you're getting the kind of crappy capabilities you're getting today. Once you understand those challenges, now when I say I'm replacing, you know, the acquisition process of infrastructure with now the click of a button, and I'm replacing what would then have to be validated requirements with the opportunity to just experiment quickly, you can immediately see kind of that step two aha of like, now it's my job to help feed you better feedback because I'm going to continuously get better solutions handed to me. So I really think it's kind of a two-piece part for operational commands today to understand just why this is so important to our mission.
Sir, one of the things that we're observing from our foxhole, and I think it's probably true across most organizations in the Army, is that in order to take advantage of cloud services, you need to be able to access your data, share data, and have it structured in a way that enables you to gain inferences from it. How as an Army do you recommend we should move forward in finding ways to structure that data and leverage it once we can get it to the cloud?
So to answer this question, I think first, we've got to acknowledge the fact that truly understanding what data we have, how it's structured, how it is being used, how it could be used, is a really complex world. like that's hard to do. That takes the skill set. It takes time. It takes people. And it's not necessarily a challenge that we've had, that we've necessarily been resourced to go and execute. And so part of this is one, getting after the people side of the house, but two, is now understanding the technology and how the current system that's getting the job done today has been built. And so really step one is starting to just kind of see yourself. Okay, and what systems are built today, right? What mission is it serving today? What data sets are actually being created within that service or even consumed by that service? So for instance, I'll give you kind of some examples. And I think there's just, you know, everyday life kind of tools. You know, you're using Google Maps or you're using Waze. You know, that system has real-time data feeds that are being pulled from a whole bunch of different sources on what traffic looks like, right? There's a whole bunch of sensors that see cars and different traffic that we have. You know, there's reports that we have on different roads. So there's all these different data feeds that are coming from some places. And then there's, you know, data of just kind of the maps and just kind of all the roads that exist, right? And you kind of get all that data. But what doesn't exist is your intention, right? Where you're trying to go, where you are today, you know, how long is it going to take you? You know, are there hazards along the way? There's now data that like we're pulling in. And if we look at how the system is designed today, you know, Google Waze, you could have, you know, millions of people requesting something at the same time. You got to have low periods of time, like, you know, maybe on the East Coast, I understand everything's 24/7, but say on the East Coast, not a lot of people are driving between, you know, 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. So like, why do they have provisioned infrastructure to support workload that isn't there? It doesn't make sense for them to do it. Well, for the Army, we've built these systems with a finite amount of resources designed a certain way for what we thought the mission was, because we had to resource it, right? We had to go through the whole planning process. We have to understand how that system's been designed, what those limitations are, and is there value in how we leverage that data in a way that we maybe didn't anticipate, you know, 5, 7, 10 years ago when that first system kind of idea came to be. And so step one is just seeing yourself. That's baselining. And that's why the Army put out the data execution order that said, hey, we're going to just start to see ourselves. What systems are out there? What data sets actually matter within those systems? How are we using it today? But then getting to how do we think we might want to be using it? Like, is there greater value here that we haven't tapped in? And with that in mind, what are the limitations of the system as designed today in order for us to now derive that value? And should we now invest people and resources to redesign those systems to complement where we think we need to go with the value of this data set? And that's why we put out the data execution order. That's why you see this movement for building a data workforce and building these skill sets and starting to tap into soldiers and civilians that have a passion and skill set getting after this world. And that's why my office was stood up, is to help enable those teams in adopting commercial cloud resources to start to now execute that modernization effort to bring the value of our data sets to bear and the systems and services that broker access to those data sets today.
Do you feel that future Army systems that are designed should be required to have application programmable interfaces, APIs, with as a requirement of the system so that we can take advantage of that system or data in different ways down the road?
Oh, 100%. That's actually precisely what I briefed the secretary back in February about, and what led to the chief data officer codifying as the data services requirements memo that the secretary signed in early April. So there's an official memorandum that requires all new acquisitions to essentially, if they are delivering a service or a data set, it has to be service enabled through an API. That is now in policy, in writing. All new acquisitions are getting scrubbed against that by ACC, because that is absolutely step one for ensuring that there's, you know, kind of, as we coin, no new bad, right? Because we have to start designing systems in a way where we start to eliminate all of these one-off custom point-to-point connections that exist. We've got like a rat's nest, if you will, of just point-to-point integrations that, one, typically are pretty custom and proprietary, and two, it costs a lot of money to put into place as well as to tweak and change. And we don't want to be investing money in these custom tweaks of point-to-point interfaces. What we want to do is we want to say, here's my service, here's my data, here's how you call and consume on this service and this data. And my service and my data is designed in a way from day one to scale with the need of the workload that's kind of presented against it. So whether it's, you know, one user or one system or, you know, 10 million calls, this system is designed in a way to broker access to this data set in an open scalable model. And then our use of the cloud infrastructure just simply needs to be able to accommodate that potential workload. So that is 100% in writing. That is now policy. And that is absolutely the way forward for the Army. And quite frankly, I'll add for the DoD. We have to be able to share and exchange data in real time across all the services. And so I see APIs as a critical component to that. And so do Army senior leaders. And that's why it's policy.
Staying with the API topic, how long is it going to take to get to the point where data is able to be shared and interoperate between different programs? Because we're looking at the same problem set here and looking at the data lakes. And as James would say, don't let your data lakes turn into data swamps. But trying to get, we see so many touch points throughout the different staff sections and within the commands of where data flows and what we need to do to make, whether it be going on a jump, scanning your CAT card, getting the jump pay updated, getting your jump log updated, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's so many more examples. So with those data lake problems, when will be able to see that move forward? And there's some bigger problem sets that will require your organization to justify and back that up a little bit. And then we'll have, then more complex problem sets are coming down the road that we need policy to change. So glad to hear we're getting a big push forward on this, but when do we see it going into effect?
So I'm gonna answer this in a few layers, if you don't mind.
Please.
One, you said, how long is it going to take, right, before we start getting this open exchange of data between programs? One approach to that would be to say, okay, like what's every single service and what's every single data set, and try and do some really great math to try and derive a date. I would counter against doing that because that essentially assumes that every single service and every single data set has value for us today, kind of in our operational architecture today. And that also typically leads to a boil of the ocean approach where people just don't just start doing. I would suggest that we look at that a different way is how quickly can we demonstrate the value of an open exchange of data that solves a challenge or a problem that you experience every single day? That's the question that I would like to pose. And the how quickly thing, quite frankly, could be, you know, right now. We've actually had it demonstrated a number of different ways. I mean, there are APIs that exist across a whole bunch of different data sets. It's some of those, like what you just described, like all of the data, like jump data, like all of the data that you guys interact with that matters to you and how you do business. Like, I would probably postulate more than likely there's not a program of record that's captured that challenge. And I was like, man, we should really service enable these data sets to enable this to kind of be a more online, you know, on-demand kind of brokering of real-time data. And that means that how quickly discussion is, well, how quickly can we get a team of soldiers that leans into how to build and write APIs to start to learn and experiment for how to accelerate how you get access to data today that solves your problems and your challenges. Like, let's lean in there. And a few things to add to that. Well, in order to do that, you need to be able to write and consume APIs. You need a platform for doing that. And so my team has spun up a team to build that API platform for you and for the Army. So in order to complement that data services requirements memo of thou shalt build and write and consume APIs, well, you need a platform to build and write consume APIs. And so we've got an API platform that's part of the Army Enterprise Cloud, C Army, that is now there, you know, for you to use and do that. Actually, that's, we tweaked that. The team just spun up, so we intended a couple months for it to be there for you to use and go do that. And that's to help accelerate the creation of APIs, but you can start doing that work today. I think it much rather is the how quickly. And I think that leads to the second most important question, which is, you know, how quickly can we speed up a community that realizes that there is no other way to do business and no greater value for us than actually enabling our data and the services that broker access to that data to support our on-demand needs in real time. Like that's the how quickly. And to me, that's the community. That's the irreversible momentum. That's the those are the timelines that I'm tracking, which is how do we just simply make this the way we do business? Because then to, you know, explicitly answer your question of like, how quickly can we get the programs to change? It would be as quick as possible, right? Because we now have the opportunity, we understand the value, we've seen how it changes the way that we do business. We have a community that's built around it that realizes that, you know, they've got to start to solve their own problems and their own challenges because, you know, all the programs of record aren't going to solve all of our problems. And that ultimately is going to answer your question. We've got the people to do it, the means to do it. We've got the imperative, like we understand the value. That at that point in time, your how quickly question becomes as soon as possible question. It can actually become real, you know, right now if we need it to.
Sir, so you
mentioned— Does that make sense?
It does, sir. And you know, you we're talking about enabling data services, and I know that your agency also enables or has software initiatives that they're looking to enable as well. You mentioned briefly the Army Software Factory. You know, I guess the natural progression of once we have the data, we can take it and package it in a way in software that allows us to make intuitive solutions for soldiers and informed decision making. So, can you talk a bit about how your agency is enabling the Army software efforts going forward?
Yeah, sure. So there's kind of a few building blocks here, and it gets into, if you dive into the knickers of how we're structured within the ECMO, it really kind of it complements the conversation here. First, you need, and I'll just kind of give you the building blocks. Like first, you need on-demand cloud computing resources. Like you need infrastructure, right? You need compute and storage in some way, shape, or form to start to get some things done with software and data. And in the constraints of the DoD, there's a certain way that you need to spin up that infrastructure so you know that it's secure. So you understand that the way that you're designing your building is actually going to be a function within the Army and the DoD enterprise. It's going to be able to, you know, meet the security requirements, the ATO process. Like, how do we actually have the components of getting an ATO simply built into how all of the infrastructure you need is created? And so that domain of essentially an Army enterprise cloud environment that's designed and built in a secure way to allow you as a customer to just spin it up and start using it that meets the DoD standards and, you know, the governance and the policy. That is something that my office has already done. We call it C-Army, and that's the Army Enterprise Cloud Environment. So we've got the infrastructure piece. Great. You know, we've talked a lot about existing operational, you know, legacy systems, but I mean, legacy is just a negative connotation for the system that's getting the job done today, right? So let's not forget the fact that it's the operational capability today, but maybe has limitations in how it's being used. We talked a lot about how we start to like, expose the data and the services that exist within those legacy systems. But to your point is, you know, okay, great, that's the data, but now how do I actually consume and use that data? Is it a human interacting with that data? Typically, that human's going to be going through an interface, and that interface is going to be built with software. Or maybe it's a machine that's calling on those data sets. Well, that machine still needs to be calling on lines of code, right, that's actually now pulling those data sets. And so who's writing the code within those machines and the codes to broker? Like, that's all software at the end of the day. So software, you can't really have data without having software. And so when it comes to software, we've got the ability now where we don't have to build like from scratch, like a web server, right? If you want to host a web page, you know, capabilities, typically you'd have to build a whole web server from scratch. Let me get a, you know, physical server, maybe throw some virtualization on top of it, throw an operating system down. Like, we now have the ability to just simply on-demand push a button because we've built web servers before, just like, hey, give me a web server, right? Now I just have to focus on, you know, what language am I going to write in? You know, what complements kind of my workflow the best? What software do I have to write? And so we find ourselves now in the domain of what are the tools of the trade of modern software development, right? We're no longer in the infrastructure business. We don't have to be clamoring with all these configurations and operating systems that provide little value for our application and the way it needs to run. Just give me a web server and let me focus on how my soldiers, right, need to interact with data so they can derive good information to make decisions. And that's a domain of modern software development. And there are common tools that are done, used in order to write software and take, you know, a line of code from an immature idea to a secure, accredited, deployable capability that is now an application solving challenges for soldiers. And so the AFC Software Factory is, okay, let's invest in our people. Let's get some soldiers and civilians understanding, you know, how to write modern software, what the tools, the trade are, what the processes look like, how we structure ourselves as teams, you know, how we have organizational leadership that understands how to lean into this talent and lead software development teams. And the common tools to go with the secure infrastructure is why my team has an environment that we've built called Create. And so we're aiming for Create to go live here, just kind of like mid, late October. And the whole entire point of Create is an acronym, I apologize, but it's the coding, resources, and transformation environment. And so the whole entire point of Create is delivering secure, modern tools of software development and providing that as a service to the Army. Because we need to put the tools in the hands of soldiers and civilians if we want to upskill and reskill them to become essentially owners of their own domain and their own solutions for fielding applications and software that enhance the way that they fight. And so to complement C Army, we have Create. And that also complements then the API platform that I spoke about earlier. And so we've got now the infrastructure, the secure infrastructure, the tools for modern software development, and the tools for exposing and exchanging data in real time. And we see these as just foundational, must-have givens for the way that we need to fight and win wars. And that's why we're providing them as a service to the Army.
For damn, I got to clear my throat. For Create, can anybody access that? And if they can, what would they be able to go and do on there?
Yeah, so the first MVP, right? So what we don't want to do is we don't want to kind of open the doors day one and be like, hey, you know, everyone, you know, come check out and use Create, because we want to create room for learning, right? And this is this whole entire notion, you know, hear people talk about, you know, failing fast. Well, it's like, well, the whole entire point of failing is to learn from it and then to, you know, apply what you've learned, right? So a lot of times that's tweaking and changing some capabilities, maybe your processes, maybe the technology itself. And so when we field our first MVP, the first customer is going to be the AFC Software Factory, because we want to learn with that team. As they get off the ground, we want to get off the ground. We want to apply what we've learned. I mean, there's a big community around this world of DevSecOps, but we have to bring the lessons learned of that community into the rest of the Army, right? Because think of all the business processes that have to now interact with the way that we write and build software. It's not just the security accreditation processes. It's our entire, like, you know, DOT and E processes. Like, what about the modeling and sim and you know, the whole test community just kind of writ large? Like, we have to start to bring our processes and enhance our processes to complement this way of building software. And so we want to be able to create room for learning. And that means that we have to start small and iterate and learn and grow. But when it comes to moving beyond MVP, as we mature the team, as we onboard new product teams, the vision is that Create would actually be a self-service capability. And so the limitation of who can use it is really who can, you know, click on a button or write a line of code to provision a secure environment for your product teams to start to build in field applications. And so the question of what you can do with it, I'll speak kind of beyond MVP, but the vision is there's some kind of basic tools that you need for modern software development. Typically, you're going to be, you know, writing lines of code with an IDE, right? An independent development environment. And typically, this is, you know, an application that runs locally on a machine. There's some web-based capabilities here. But typically, you're going to write an IDE to start to write in, you know, your language of choice, whether it's, you know, Java or, you know, Node.js, whatever it might be, you leaning in there. So it starts with an IDE. So first, we've got to deliver a secure independent development environment. And so you'd have that capability, and then you need a way to take, you know, that code that you've written and start to integrate it with maybe the other lines of code. Maybe you've got a team that's working on a product and capability. And so this world of continuous integration, right, writing lines of code and integrating it and starting to throw it into a pipeline that automates the way that we validate that the lines of code, you know, are good quality code, that there's no vulnerabilities that, you know, exist in the lines of code, it's secure, maybe the dependencies of the code, you know, there's no vulnerabilities there. You know, there's a way that we can kind of mature this to become, you know, from, you know, a good idea that becomes lines of code that actually moves through a pipeline, a continuous integration, a delivery pipeline, where out the other end, we have now good, clean, secure code that can now be deployed into an operational environment, or maybe just a test environment to kind of get some, you know, limited feedback and kind of just integrated testing, if you will. So the whole pipeline, the CI/CD pipeline, to have a source code repository, a building process, the ability to run statics, you know, scans against lines of code, or even, you know, get it deployed into a test environment where we run some dynamic scans against it and see how it actually functions, you know, under load testing, or how it functions and how it exchanges and passes data with other systems. And then now the ability to go and field it into an operational environment. That whole CI/CD pipeline, we believe, needs to be a self-service capability so that we can grow the community that is putting hands on keyboard and doing. And we see that as being a really critical resource that needs to be centrally resourced for the Army. So there's use of a lot of open source tools that we can handle the scale of people, and we don't just kind of, you know, choke on the cost of licenses. But where we see kind of the break where there's, you know, the need for approvals is the actual spin up of infrastructure, like the long standing, I just built a great application, it needs to run, you know, forever globally across the Army. Well, there's a cost there. And there's a cost tied to the infrastructure, the computing, the storage resources. And so, you know, as we mature, this team is learning, you know, how do we resource that? How do we structure that? You know, is there a chargeback model for that? You know, do we carve kind of a certain amount of, you know, test environment that everyone is kind of a, you know, up to this amount of workload, it's free, and then you have to pay. So there's a whole bunch of different ways that we can manage that ecosystem. But the future state vision is we need to put the ability to build secure solutions in software into the hands of our soldiers and civilians, because it's going to be our soldiers and civilians who start to fill the gaps for what we've seen as kind of the technical limitations of how we've delivered capabilities to date. And that needs to be a self-service, on-demand resource that they have at the tip of their fingers whenever they need and want it to solve some challenges that they have day to day.
And for the casual listener, just for context, when we were referencing MVP, that was a minimally viable product. Going off of what you just said, sir, I love the idea of enabling soldiers to solve their own problems. I don't see today the human the talent management resourcing and or structure or career path for soldiers to do this full time. So are you designing this with the intent that commanders will designate people to do this full time, or that soldiers will be working on these things in their off time? And then I guess the follow on to that is for the sustainment of these applications, you know, a lot of soldiers tend to PCS in a 2 to 4 year time frame. So like how do you see like soldiers participating in this or units and organizations?
Yeah, that's a really great question, because it's still it's a complex challenge, especially the way that we kind of organize, we structure ourselves today. So a few different pieces there. One, the ECFO is not doing, any of this alone. I mean, any of the successes that we've seen in kind of the short time that my office has existed has all been through partnerships and collaboration. And getting to the talent management side of the house is really no different. So G1 has been leaning hard in here as well. We've got General McGee and the Talent Management Task Force that are awesome partners to have in leading the challenge of, hey, how do we actually build this talent? Like, how do we get the skill sets captured in the Army? How do we get this integrated into TRADOC? How do we start sourcing, people, coming out of college and ROTC that maybe have computer science degrees that don't necessarily, align to your typical kind of IT, kind of realm? Is there a way for us to think a little bit more broadly of who has these skill sets and how we tap into these skill sets? And so G1 is leaning hard in there. HRC is leaning hard. Chara, for instance, on the civilian side of the house, there's a whole bunch of different ways that we can start to get after sourcing this talent. And for us to start tracking the ability to contribute, in data engineering, data sciences, data analysis, software engineering, cloud architecture, this is bigger than just, some branch, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that you've got to be like a signal officer. If you've got a passion and you know how to write lines of code, how do we start to tap into that passion and that skill set? So there's how the way that we kind of start to look for this talent, but then there's how do we start actually making this, beneficial to the careers of our soldiers and our civilians to lean in harder, right? Like, maybe there's a passion and they're curious about it, but how do we make it something where it complements their career growth and it's not seen as, just kind of a like almost a career killer if they were to go and spend some time, writing software for a couple of years and solving challenges. And so this is what the partnership with AFC and the Software Factory is really hoping to learn more about and to solve in real time. Is as we start to do, we're going to understand more about how we need to structure ourselves, how we need to manage this talent, how do we need to grow these careers. How do we need to make it so that it's beneficial to our soldiers and our civilians' careers to lean in, right? Because, far too often, it's seen as is kind of a career killer. So there's some critical things that we have to learn there if we want to do it right. But another piece that I see us teasing out with the AFC Software Factory is, what does our organizational leadership need to look like? Like managing, software developers and data scientists, there's just kind of this different dynamic and this different culture, and it requires organizational leadership that understands how to cultivate that talent and nurture this talent and grow these people. It's not one of those things where it's like, hey, you're great at software, cool, go manage my account for me. Like, there's a certain amount of empowerment and autonomy that we need to start to give more of resources and environments and ecosystems that we need to grant access to in order for this digital talent to be leveraged effectively. Because otherwise, people are going to get frustrated. They're going to want to leave the Army and they're going to see better career, growth opportunities elsewhere. And I would argue, no one else has our mission. No one else has the reach and the opportunity that we have. And so it's not enough for us to just kind of source the talent. We have to grow the careers, make it a beautiful, wonderful, awesome place to live and to work, to contribute to the real-time mission of the Army in software. And that's going to be something we have to learn and we have to get right. Thankfully, we've got senior leaders that are committed. They understand the challenge and the need, and they're committed to figuring it out and getting it right.
So I've heard you mention many times that the key to this is how smart as a workforce we are on the progression, software development or cloud technology. And one of the points you just made about ROTC, and I've got one of my really good friends who's the professor of military science at a small college called Rose Holman Institute of Technology in Indiana. And he talks to me all the time about these cadets and how advanced they are and all that they and he talks to me all the time about what they have as far as degrees, certs, what coding languages they're proficient in. And so it's just, it's really impressive. But for the older generation, you know, and so I've heard you mention education of the workforce is key. And one of the things you've mentioned quite a bit here is CI/CD pipeline. And I just wanted to see if you could go over the continuous integration, continuous delivery pipeline, what it is, and what the force needs to know about it.
Yeah, so I dove into a few pieces of it before, and I'd maybe nuance your question just a little bit. We need a workforce that is passionate about learning, just period, full stop. And I don't care what dang generation you're a part of. If you are passionate about learning, let's talk. Because there's, you know, the world of software development is changing all the time. There's new technologies that are created. Is for us to kind of understand, you know, the why and how it came to be is critical. So, you know, as I dive into like just, you know, a few pieces of a CI/CD pipeline, you know, heck, if you're down to learn, you know, let's go. There's a lot of learning to be had. So CI/CD. So, you know, I explained a little bit of it before, but CI, you know, stands for continuous integration, continuous delivery. Sometimes people will say continuous deployment, but there is a distinct difference between delivery and deployment. Delivery is essentially the ability to deploy, right? So I've got good operational code and it's ready. Like it's ready to be fielded. It's secure. Like let's go. But there's an actual distinction with now deploying, right? Like actually getting it fielded, becoming green lights, running operational somewhere. And a lot of times we actually as an Army have a challenge getting from the delivery side over to the deployment side. The actual fielding side for the Army can be a challenge. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a CI/CD pipeline. So a CI/CD pipeline is essentially a reference to the typical steps of taking, you know, a line of code and turning it into an artifact that is able to be deployed, right? So taking a line of code, integrating it with essentially, the rest of your team and the other lines of code, and then taking now that line of code that has been integrated and ensuring that, you know, its existence, you know, makes sense. It doesn't create any issues. There's no bugs in it. But now I can take that, you know, that now application, package it up, deliver it, and then have a mechanism that allows me to deploy it into operations. And so the typical tools of the trade there, like I said, so you've got, you know, an IDE, but a lot of times development starts locally, your local, you know, workstation or, you know, development environment. Typically software developers have a whole bunch of, you know, tools or some weird customizations, you know, some things that kind of makes them, you know, more productive for the way they build their IT systems. So you've got that side of the house that taps into the kind of the writing lines of code. You then, you know, need to now integrate those lines of code into typically a single source of truth for like, hey, where does like kind of my supply chain for my lines of code and my software exist? And that's a code repository. And so typically you'll merge into however you guys are doing your branching and how you guys are taking your lines of code and, you know, merging it into your master. Maybe there's a whole bunch of different tests that you run to get to your merge to master, but there's a single source of truth for your lines of code, and that's a source code repository. So think of that as just kind of like a big database of lines of code, if you will. And so what will typically happen is those lines of code now need to be built, right? Like you need to actually take those lines of code and, you know, maybe there's different compilers that need to exist for various languages that you write in. But at some point, you've got to take human language where you can see lines of code and start to turn it into binary, because right, a machine needs to now interact with those lines of code. And so you've got to take that human language, and so you're going to start to compile those lines of code. And what's going to start to happen is a machine is now going to start analyzing your lines of code. And that's when we talk about static analysis. There's a whole bunch of different tools for different languages, and you're going to start to do analysis of your lines of code. Once you've done your analysis of your lines of code, maybe there's some, you know, things that you're going to verify. You're like, oop, that's, you know, not very good, or, you know, there's different things I can improve upon or whatever it might be. And then you may have some other tests that you need to run. And typically what will happen after static analysis is you now want to actually deploy it, right? So you want to package it up and actually deploy it and get it running somewhere so you can run more tests against it. And typically that's the whole entire world of dynamic analysis. And this, you know, there's a number of different things that can happen in your dynamic analysis, and there's various testing that you can do. So you can test, you know, integration. So maybe there are other services that your application needs to interact with, and you're going to run some tests there. Maybe you want to kind of emulate how a human might interact with, you know, your application. Maybe it's a web page, and we kind of, you know, go through some different things there. Or maybe there's, you know, some kind of some ways that you want to test, like, hey, what if like a really stupid user did all these kind of stupid things in the interface? Would it break, you know, my system? And so you're just going to run kind of a whole dynamic suite of tests that's now in a running application. And you're then going to probably look at the results. And all throughout, typically, there's tools that are looking at security-relevant things that are happening as well. So maybe there's, you know, a suite of tools that, you know, a security team is doing independent validation of what's happening. These are all things happening within a CI/CD pipeline, because you got to put lines of code through a gauntlet, right? You have to have a way that you manage your configuration of your software. You have to have a kind of a supply chain, if you will. Think of it as just kind of a digital supply chain to get, you know, immature, you know, unsecure lines of code into mature, secure, operational applications and services that now you can go and deploy. And the world of modern software development is, how can I leverage automation to just do it all for me, right? And it's getting to this world where, you know, writing lines of code and the tests that we're running, we're simply stating how we want our applications and our infrastructure and everything to just be and what write looks like, and continuously running through a gauntlet of tests to get to that known, good, secure state. And then working full automation, and this is really the value of cloud computing, is now fully automating how I actually go and deploy that artifact globally. And there's a lot of complexity there, talking about, you know, various platforms and orchestration management. But to answer your question, typically those are the basic components that have happened within a CI/CD pipeline. And each one of those components are components that will be part of Create that we're fielding to the Army.
Sir, I appreciate the rundown. You know, for our listeners, I understand that, you know, you're working to get the, I guess, initial prototype out into the world. But, you know, come next year, I presume this will be available to more of the Army. So how can they get access to this, or you know, where could they go to like follow along and watch as Create and these tools and services become available to them?
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, MVP Raymond for mid to late October, and we intend for quick maturity to grow from there. So, you know, I would think probably, you know, into early Q2 of the next fiscal year is when we'd start to look to really open the aperture of product teams and also maturing the actual products within Create itself. When it comes to tracking what in the world is going on, so there's a few different mediums. So we've got an Enterprise Cloud Working Group. That's a good engagement that we hold online on Teams every other week. So there's a good engagement there. There's also an Army DevSecOps community that's in Teams as well. So a community built around how do we converge development, security, and operations for the Army and accelerate the timelines to get good capabilities into the hands of soldiers globally. There's a growing community there, so a great way to engage with the Create team is to tap into that medium there on CVR. So if you search Army and DevSecOps, you'll be able to find it. And then there's a whole ecosystem around just kind of all things cloud. And these are all various ways to get access to, you know, the individual teams within the ECMO or just the community around adopting cloud and modern software development. So Teams is probably the easiest and simplest mechanism to engage with us. But again, if say, for instance, you haven't activated your Teams account, you can email us at armycloud@mail.mil. And, you know, in some way, shape, or form, you'll be able to get a hold of us and engage. And then, you know, for those that are out there, I mean, you know, I'm on LinkedIn. You can hit me up on LinkedIn. I can try and broker access to the right people. There's a whole bunch of different means and mechanisms to get a hold of us, especially if you want to engage. Or ask around. Ask your friends and your peers if they know someone. You know, there's that community has tentacles all over the Army. And so how you can kind of ensure that you're getting introduced to the right people the right way, there's a whole bunch of different ways to access us and follow along.
So I've heard you mention AFC or Army Futures Command Software Factory quite a bit. Also, I've heard Orion Forge coming from Network CFT. And then also you've got your organization, ECMO. Potentially there's one or two that I've missed as well, but can you kind of give a breakdown of what each does and how they differ?
Yeah. So I think this is also kind of growing learning as well. So we, you know, we've got a number of, you know, programs across the Army. We've got a number of operational commands across the Army, that kind of want one of two things, or maybe even both, is ensuring that they are getting their people as part of the cohorts into AFC Software Factory, right? Like I want to upskill and train my people to learn how to do this the right way, understand how to build modern software development. So obviously there's the leaning in there with AFC. But the second component is, you know, AFC is not going to be building a whole bunch of just kind of like fun hello world applications that serve no, you know, mission value to the Army. AFC is going to be leaning into real problems that exist across the commands today in the Army. So they can actually field software solutions that solve problems. Like we want value quickly. And so commands are engaging AFC, not just for, hey, you know, can my people make a cohort, but also can you help me solve some of these problems? And we're starting to see, you know, teams starting to try and spin up and accelerate, trying to get to solving some of those problems, leveraging continuous integration and delivery, you know, leveraging kind of like a DevSecOps ecosystem, leveraging the cloud. And we're starting to see kind of teams start to kind of name their initiatives like, hey, we want to start to get after this, you know, for ourselves and start to learn. And so that's where we're seeing teams, you know, like Orion Forge spinning up over at Aberdeen Proving Ground, starting to get into, hey, how do we bring the value of the way that we build software like this into, you know, the programs, into PEO C3T? How do we collaborate with the DOT and the community? How do we get this fielded into tactical environments? How do we, you know, change our infrastructure and how do we address the network side of the house to create an integration between not just what was once tactical compute, but now how do we turn tactical compute into a tactical cloud that's integrated with an enterprise cloud and start to now design systems that can function globally? That's where we see like these initiatives start to get named, like Orion Forge. And I anticipate starting to see a number of kind of teams wanting to learn more and do more and starting to kind of like, you know, put their mark on what they're doing and where and how they're doing it. I think my guidance to them would be, you know, this is all about, you know, trying and learning quickly, but it's also about having a problem to solve. And so where I think a lot of new initiatives typically kind of fall on themselves is they try and do too much too quickly. And a lot of the value of the startup community, really think of yourselves as a startup, is, you know, how can I just simply reuse what other people have done to kind of bootstrap myself to get going so I can get to learning as quickly as possible? Because the challenge there is new initiatives spin up across the Army. The challenge there is if you just try and recreate everything, because maybe there's a lot of nuance for the way that you operate, you're going to find that you're, you know, 6, 9, 12 months down the road, and you've only accomplished recreating what already exists elsewhere, and you haven't gotten to that value add for you. And so I'd love for those teams that are curious about spinning up to reach out to my team. I'd love to help. Again, the infrastructure, the tools for modern software development, you know, the data exchange side of the house is our opportunity to start to try and learn is probably best served for you to just simply engage and reuse what we're doing, and maybe even like, you know, grow and partner the community so we can accelerate our timelines so that we can meet, you know, operational outcomes for you faster. That's kind of how I would hope people, you know, would start to engage. And so, you know, Orion Forge reached out and started to engage. There's some others across the Army as well. And at the end of the day, it's really growing this community around how do we solve problems faster. We just want to make sure that we're being thoughtful and we're not, wasting our resources on duplicate efforts where we could be just simply reusing from others, building a community, partnering, and then filling the gap for the nuanced, you know, specific needs of our mission so that we can get to learning quickly, so that we can then, you know, drive better feedback and, you know, maybe drive different resources or different organizational constructs or policy changes that we need to make so this becomes more of just simply the way we do business. And we can accelerate outcomes for the Army in the new way that we do business, and our policy and our infrastructure and our resourcing is aligned to complement those initiatives.
Hey, sir, I appreciate the rundown. That was informative, and it definitely gave me a better sight picture of who's participating in the space and you know, how we can get involved and you know, continue to follow along from our organization. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no worries. I think if there's some kind of, you know, closing thoughts here, you know, this is one of those things where I'd love for people to reach out and start to ask questions and learn more. I'd love for people to not be like, man, I hope they figure it out. But for people to reach out and say like, hey, like, how can I help? Like, maybe I don't even know where to start, but like, where do I even start to learn how I can help? I'd love for people to just even just become more informed. Maybe just some of this stuff is intriguing to you. Maybe you're like, hey, you know, can you just like kind of give me some things to do and learn? I'm always looking to grow. I'm always looking to kind of enhance my skill sets or just even be able to speak about these things beyond just kind of, you know, buzzwords. You know, a lot of my time is spent just kind of deconstructing a buzzword. Right, it's just hey, we keep saying this word all the time. It's, you know, it's kind of like Nigo Montoya, right, for Princess Bride. Like, you keep using that word. I don't think that word means what you think it means. Like, we just need to kind of have that pause moment of like, hey, you know, I've always said this, but like, what does that actually mean? Like, if that is just kind of if that speaks to you, if that resonates with you, reach out to the team. For us to create this world of continuously learning is critical. It's even echoed in like the Quantum Leap initiative within CP34 to upskill and reskill civilian program around, you know, IT services. Is they're investing in licenses for people to go and learn and get smart on what these capabilities mean and the technologies and how to put it together is. Please reach out. Please ask, you know, how you can help. You know, hold us accountable to enabling you to be able to help, or at the very least be able to learn. A lot of my conversations and one of the people on my team is a lot of the value in what we're doing is translating. It is translating kind of this new digital marketplace that's spinning up and starting to, you know, clarify the words that are used, like your question about CICDs, just starting to translate for people to understand, you know, what these technologies are, how they can be leveraged, you know, what kind of workloads complement a cloud versus what kind of workloads you know, don't, like, just starting to understand and learn is critical. So please reach out and just ask how you can help. Because I think as we learn more and do more, and this is one of the three pillars of a cloud smart methodology, the three pillars for those who want the edification is getting around procurement, around security, and around people, right? The adopting cloud fundamentally changes the way that we've approached all three. And so on the people part side of the house, this is all about upskilling the digital talent. It's a big focus of the DoD CIO. It's captured in the National Defense Strategy. So how do we lean in here? So my team would love to help. Would love to help point you in the right direction. Would love to learn with you. So please reach out and hold us accountable to that to enable you to be better contributors to the mission that we've got.
Yeah, I know that was your closeout. I just got my buddy sent me a question because he is that ROTC PMS that I referenced. But so I'll do this and we can fill it back in, you know, because that was obviously your closeout. So his question was, what's the best way for cadets? So to going back to that ROTC PMS, but what's the best way for cadets or even academia to engage on some of these initiatives?
Yeah, so cadets. So let's talk kind of cadets writ large. I think is starting the narrative. Like our ROTC programs, you know, commands across the Army, more and more people need to start just engaging in conversations around digital modernization, what it means, what the tools of the trade are, how we can contribute, you know, what mission outcomes would benefit from it, how we learn how to expose what mission outcomes, you know, would benefit from it. Like, where do we invest first? I think part of it is starting the conversation. I would actually love to come, you know, virtually engage with ROTC programs, you know, across the United States that want to learn more about this. How do we actually then, you know, partner with those schools? How do we get cadets that maybe they're not taking a class in, you know, software engineering, and maybe there's an open, you know, 3 credits that they can squeeze into their curriculum to start to learn a little bit more about this. Like, maybe there's some partnerships that would be great at some of the universities that can help enable, you know, ROTC programs in cadets. And I actually wrote a white paper on this, is how do we actually partner, you know, computer science programs at various schools along with cadets to create opportunities even for students who aren't cadets at those schools to come in as civilian data engineers and software developers for the Army, who now, you know, take, like, you know, classes, like leadership classes and lab classes with the ROTC program to learn about the Army, to learn about Army culture, and then potentially get, you know, internships or even, you know, young GS positions, civilian positions within the Army to come in as software developers. Like, there's tons of opportunity here for how cadets and how universities can lean in. And it starts with just simply having a conversation, understanding the imperative, and then for, you know, for senior leaders to lean in. So I would love, you know, to work with, you know, anyone, any ROTC program, any cadets, please reach out to my team. That would be awesome to bring us in earlier for how we can start to collaborate and kind of come up with, you know, better ideas that we can now, you know, resource and start to work around and tease out for how we can get universities and cadets more engaged with this initiative.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a Rose Holman Institute of Technology invite for just that. And I think out of that, you're going to see probably a lot of programs. And I think, like you said, the workforce and the younger generation coming out of colleges and universities is absolutely going to make this program and develop to get to where we as the Army need to be. So that's a great comment and great question.
With that, sir, we want to say, you know, thank you for your time today. This was definitely an enjoyable hour, and you know, some very interesting and challenging problems that your agency has set out to enable for the Army. So we absolutely look forward to seeing what you all do, and look forward to working with you in the future. And thank you for your time today.
Hey, listen, thanks for having me. I think it's an awesome challenge to have, right? Like, it's just we're at a cool time in history, and we have a cool opportunity in front of us that just has immense value, you know, for us to just lean into and just lean in hard. So, listen, this is fun. It's better with friends and partners that you know, come alongside you and understand the imperative and just want to lean in as well. And thank you just for the opportunity to chat about this. Just kind of get the word out, get more people listening. You know, it's good. Get more opportunity for the Army to lean in and just start to own operational outcomes, you know, for ourselves, leveraging modern technology and, you know, starting to, you know, round out the rough edges for where and how we can improve and, you know, the way we do business, so that we can see those operational outcomes. So I'm just thankful for the time. Thanks for you guys engaging with me in the office and the partnership. Just looking forward to what we're going to be doing together. I'm stoked to be here, and thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, friends, out here.
This recording and any information or material placed on this podcast, including advice and opinions, are the views and responsibilities of those making the comments and do not represent the views of the Department of Defense, the United States government, or its third-party service providers. Thank you.